Yes, most queers are obnoxious. But that's just the way the world has made us.
I know, you're obnoxious.
Welcome to Documenta and Son, being the adventures of a dad who's gay and a son who is figuring shit out. My name is Documenta Barbarism. Look on my works, ye mighty, and despair.
And I'm Dingle Mary, the nephew of Dingle Auntie. Hi, Auntie.
Hi, Dingle Auntie. Glad to have you with us.
We appreciate you. Mwah.
So, Dingle Mary.
So, Documenta.
Have you listened to Adventures in Gaybysitting yet?
No, because I've been terrified of all the sexy stuff you say in it.
Well, I wouldn't say that the stuff I say is sexy. That is sexual. It's sex obsessed. It's sex. No, yeah, it's sexy. Yeah, no, that's true. I am pretty fucking sexy. You're right. So I can see how that would be awkward.
Uh-oh. I've just given him a complex, guys.
But the reason I asked is because we talked about you.
Yay.
It was in mostly nice terms.
Mostly.
No, looking back on it, so I did listen to it, obviously, because I was editing it. And I realized that some of the stuff was pretty rude, but it was about you, like, as a newborn and a baby, so it's not that rude. Like, we talked about your massive head, how you were too big to come out of your mother's snatch, so we had to cut you out and all of that stuff, and how you learned to walk before you could crawl.
I butt-scooched all the way around the house.
So cute. I wish we had more. I don't know if we have any video of that.
I don't know, but I have all the memories, the visual memories, the sense memory. I remember my butt scooching
you
across
do?
Wooden floors. Huh? Heck yeah.
Wow, and you probably have amazing abs still too, huh?
Ooh, guys, they are glistening. I have no idea how abs are supposed to look.
Glistening. No, glistening. That's right.
And a big one is also my butt scooching across the carpet at my grandma's house.
Oh,
because I did that a lot, especially on their stairs to the upstairs, because I would crawl up it and then butt slide down them.
That's
and
right.
It was so fun.
Wow, that's amazing. That was, you were young.
Yeah.
That is, are you sure you haven't just
positive?
Wow, that is incredible.
I must have done it a lot.
Yeah. So what was it like inside Dingle Mommy's womb?
Dark. No, I don't know.
What did you... You've listened to our episode, the episode of Documenta and Son, too, right?
Of course. I love hearing my own voice.
No, you don't.
No, really. I don't. My voice on radio is so bad.
No, it's glorious, and I've told you that. And people emailed me to tell me that and texted me to tell me that you sound amazing on the radio. So, sorry about it.
Thank you for all the support, guys.
Have you shared it with any of your friends?
No, I'm planning to share it tomorrow at the first ever GSA meeting at my school.
Ooh, that's right. I can't wait. That's going to be fun to hear about.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't told any of your like D&D group or anything?
No, I want to tell them, all my friends, about it at my birthday party I'm having this Sunday.
You cannot be turning 16. That is fucked.
I am.
Okay, so you haven't, so it's not that you haven't shared it yet out of like shame?
No, it's just I've been too lazy to.
Okay, because I'm really interested. I hope you do, because I am really interested to hear what your peers say, what they think about it.
Me too.
Because that's another thing, not to pat ourselves on the back too much, but another thing that some friends have expressed is that they've never really heard anything like this before, where a queer youth gets to speak to a queer elder, you know, especially a queer elder in their family, and work through the becoming of queerness in that way.
Yes.
And that's really exciting.
And elder is the right word.
Fuck you, Alyssa. So after the great Mad Libs, Pride Parade Mad Libs debacle of 2021, I decided to retire the Mad Libs for now, possibly, probably forever. So I thought we would play Drag Race Guess Who?
Oh my gosh. guys. We've played this once before. I wasn't sure how to play, so I was going by, like, dresses and whatnot, like, actual.
Well, let's see if you remember any of your lessons. So this isn't, there's no official here. Do you want to be blue or red?
Red, obviously.
Okay. So there is no official Drag Race Guess Who. I got this off of Instagram earlier in the year, like April. It was a fundraiser for the Trans Women of Color Collective through Instagram, and it's called Binge Off the Screen or Bots. What they did is they just retrofitted a Guess Who set and just with images of from your favorite TV shows. They did all kinds of different TV shows. Naturally, I chose RuPaul's Drag Race.
Gentlemen, start your engines.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
May the best woman win.
Not anymore. Now it's best drag queen.
Word.
So you might as well just know now that you are going to be hearing a lot about Drag Race. Drag Race, even though neither of us had seen a single second of it before January 2020, it has become, over the past year, a very important cultural text in this home.
Yes. It was a shining light during the pandemic, which sounds so cliche, but it was. That's
fine. We are walking cliches. It got me, I got me through PhD exams. It got us through the darkest times of the pandemic. I don't know if you remember this, but when I came out to you last year, you told me that one of the reasons that it was easy for you to accept was because of Drag Race.
Oh yeah. I thought it was just preparing me. Honestly.
And maybe I subconsciously was. I wasn't on purpose, but perhaps maybe part of me knew that. Was it just because so many people on the show talk about
being queer? And like, I got a more in-depth look of what queerness meant, because a lot of my like cultural experience before then was very, very hetero.
You're right, and I'm sorry.
But I also, to add on to what you're saying, I think it, on top of you coming out, also started my sexual awakening, so to speak, because before then I never like thought about sexual attractions or romantic attractions like I have now.
And then Cameron Michaels took his shirt off. Oof. Do you need to go take a cold shower?
I'll be right back, guys.
So yes, and you know, we understand, just RuPaul says and does a lot of dumb shit. We understand that it is, you know, there's a lot of stuff that is a problem about it. We get all that. We get that they equate fame and celebrity with empowerment, and that can be dangerous, and that they also don't need us to advertise for them. But at the same time, we love it. It's become part of our shared queer vocabulary. And so you're going to hear about it a lot.
Word.
Yes, Thanalina. So let's just play a little, let's try a little Binge Off the Screen Drag Race and see how it goes, okay?
If I remember correctly, I think when we first played this, we played a few rounds, and I think we ended up tied in wins.
Not even close.
Really?
You did really terrible. I murdered you. I think you maybe won once, but that's okay.
No, you're supposed to create tension, Dad.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We need like a narrative arc.
We do.
That's right. I remember. It was 3-3. The tension was so thick you could cut it with a stiletto heel. We vowed to never play the game again for fear that it would destroy our relationship. But now, its draw has become too strong. The gravity pull of RuPaul's wig has brought us back for one last round.
Grr.
What?
I don't know. I was trying to be scary and like
grr. Halloween-y.
Yeah.
Who is Gothy Kendall? Gothy Kendall. Rawr. Walk, 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 walk. Rawr.
Cute. UK season 1 is, and season 2 are probably some of my favorite seasons.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, UK is the bomb.
Mostly just because English people are more interesting than Americans.
Okay, take one. Great, you just lost us all of our American audience.
Dun, 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 dun.
Okay. So put it in your thingy, remember? So now we've drawn our cards, and you're the youngest and the ugliest, so why don't you go first?
All right.
Well, you got to put yours down first.
Oh, yes. I will go first so you don't feel bad for being so old and wrinkly. Are you white?
Yes.
I remember asking this before, but is Bianca Del Rio white?
Yes.
And how are we handling Ornacia?
Ornacia is white.
Okay.
It's tough because it's, yeah.
Oh, and Alaska, because she's blue in her picture.
Alaska is white okay. as well.
Great.
All right, so.
And Raja?
Raja is South Asian.
Okay.
Remember?
Yes. I blame the season 3 filter for that one. I blame the early season filter. For that.
Yeah, but he talks about it constantly, so I think it's just your memory.
Yeah, but also, I sort of just, like, wiped season 1 through 3 out of my memory, like, right after finishing them.
That's a shame. There's some good and very weird shit in those seasons.
I like the drapes challenge, but,
That's fine. We'll rewatch them.
Yay.
I've only watched the whole show 3 times in the last year.
Only.
Okay, are you white?
I am white.
Are you white? You are, you say?
Yes, I am white.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
You don't have to wait for me.
Are you a winner of any, or of main seasons?
No. Are you, let's see.
And by main seasons, I don't mean
all-stars. You mean not all-stars, right?
Not all-stars.
Did you, actually that, you probably wouldn't even know this. This is tough. Did you win All-Stars?
No.
Damn it. That wasn't very smart, because there aren't very many.
Mm-mm. All right. Did you win in season 6 or later?
I didn't win. Did you put down all the non-winners?
Let's start over.
Okay. I was Ornacia.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was Victoria Porkchop Porker.
Porkchop Parker.
Yeah, I know. I call her Porker because it's funny.
Hey, Porkchop.
Welcome to the Porkchop Loading Deck. Ugh, season 13, dock. Guys.
Loading Dock. Loading Dock. Right. Okay.
He did just watch that recently, so that was a slight against his.
No, he was just wrong. Jesus. All right, so put yours down, and I'm going to go first because... Face it, girls, I'm older and I got more insurance. Fried green tomatoes. Are you white?
Yes, I am white.
Damn it. It's so much easier when you're not.
Yeah, there are 2/3 of the queens are white here.
Okay.
Are you white?
Nope.
Yes.
It's all right. I would be worried, but you always put down the wrong queen, so.
Hold on, I'm just going to check.
I'm still is going
to. Is Adore
white?
Adore is white, yes. Adore in the picture, it looks weird.
Adore is also Latinx.
Ooh, listen to that. Isn't that satisfying to listen to? Ornacia is black.
No, Ornacia is white. I mean, that's a... I think last time, actually, we said that she was black.
Yes, because they are...
Who because of Vivacious.
Vivacious.
Is her voice. But she's white.
Her faceplate is literally white.
Yeah. So that one, I don't know. Whose turn is it?
Yours. I just put down a bunch of...
Oh, yeah. Oh. Are you... did you... Have you won either regular season or All-Stars?
Yes.
You have? Okay. Yes. Oh, shit. There's a lot of winners on here. Okay, good. There's still a lot of losers, too.
That's my club.
The Losers Club?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sad.
Have you won a season?
Yep. Have you won All-Stars?
Yes.
Yes, you have. Okay. Ooh, it's getting close. We each have 3 left. Okay, it's your turn.
Have you won All-Stars?
Nope. Oh, no. Okay, who am I?
Are you Bob the Drag Queen?
I sure am not.
What? Oh my gosh.
Okay, hold on. I think you lose automatically if you guess wrong, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, let me just see if I can get it from this.
Oh my gosh.
Did you win? let's see. How can I whittle these down with one last question?
Let me see.
No, I want to know. I want to figure it out. Did you win All-Stars 3 or later?
No.
Oh, dang it. That doesn't really help. So you're Alaska or Chad Michaels?
I am Alaska.
Okay. Luckily. I'm Rajah, bitch. What did you put down? When did you put her down?
I don't know.
Well, that's fine. See, that's why I love this game. I never lose. I mean, finally, a winner had been determined. The road had been long and hard. But as usual, Dad came out victorious.
Grr.
Okay, let's take a little breaky.
Breaky time.
Bye.
Grr.
Arr.
Arr.
If you live in the greater New York area or have a good microphone and would like to share your story on Closet Practice, anonymously or not, message me on Twitter at DocumentaB, on Instagram at DocumentaBarbarism, online at DocumentaBarbarism.com, or by email to buttstuff@DocumentaBarbarism.com, with only one A in barbarism. That's DocumentaBarbarism. In the meantime, be sure to subscribe to House of Barbarism on your pod thingy of choice so you don't miss a single episode of Adventures in Gaybysitting and Closet Practice every Monday, and Documenta and Son every Thursday. And we're back!
Nothing happened before we started recording.
This is the very first moment we have recorded since you last heard from us.
First attempt.
So this week, we are talking about what everybody is talking about, because everybody's talking about
Jamie. I thought you didn't realize, I didn't realize you were about to say Jamie, so I thought you were asking me to say Jamie, so luckily we said it at the same time.
Phew, that could have been really embarrassing otherwise.
Really embarrassing. Luckily, just like not the rest of this podcast.
Luckily,
is.
We didn't sound like morons. So, we are talking about the film. Everybody's talking about Jamie, the 2021 film, which recently came out on Amazon, which is based on the 2017 musical, which premiered in the Sheffield Crucible Theater, which was based on the 2011 BBC 3 documentary called Jamie, Drag Queen at 16.
Whew. I just want to know who the person was that was like, they saw this TV doc and was like, yes, I need this as a musical. And then somebody saw the musical and was like, yes, I need this as a movie. Like, what was the thought process that led to this, you know? That's just...
Well, let's talk about it. You watched the documentary. Didn't you watch... The documentary is fucking rousing.
It's really good.
Don't you think?
Yeah, I really like the doc.
Okay, well, before we dive in, why don't you give us a loose sort of description of the plot of the film so we get an idea of what it is that we're dealing with.
Yes, unfortunately, my father did give me duties to do here.
Duties. Oh, I'm sorry that you have to put forth a little bit of effort on this podcast.
So the basic outline of the movie, the musical movie... is Jamie wants to be a drag queen. He just turned 16. It's been his birthday. He dreams of being a famous drag queen. Things aren't great with his dad. He has a friend who convinces him to go to prom in drag because prom is coming up. To prepare, he goes to a drag store and meets an old queen named Hugo who becomes his mentor. He sings a song about AIDS and that scares Jamie a little bit. He's like, how can I ever compare? And then Pretty is like, do it because they enabled you to.
Who's Pretty?
His friend.
Yeah, I know. You haven't...
Oh, yeah. Pretty is his friend. Yes. And she plays the literal supporting role.
Uh-huh. The fag hag?
Yeah.
What? That's what she is. She's a fag hag.
I just didn't expect that. Hugo provides a dress for Jamie, but is like, bitch, you don't get this for free. You have to pay for it. So he gets like 3 extra jobs and manages to pay for the dress. Then Hugo gets Jamie a spot in the drag show, like the local drag show in Sheffield, UK. That's an important detail. This all takes place in the UK in a town named Sheffield.
Mm-hmm.
He announces his drag show to the entire class, despite being warned against it. The show finally comes along. He has stage fright. All the other queens sing a song that inspire him. A couple of bullies heckle him, but they get removed, and then he has a great performance. Later, his dad tells Jamie that he shouldn't go to prom in drag and breaks some news about his... Because the mom and the dad have been separated. And then the dad's new girlfriend is pregnant, and he wants nothing to do with Jamie anymore, so that makes Jamie sad. He gets mad at his mom for not telling him. He goes on a drunken, like, rampage. Does some wild shit. Like, getting in full drag, and then just walking on the field during the soccer game his dad is,
It's not like, really watching. Full drag. Doesn't he just sort of, like, tie a jersey around himself like a dress or something?
No, it's not even like a jersey. It's just, like, streamers, I think.
Weird.
Yeah.
Cut to the end.
Pretty convinces him again to do prom and drag. He does it. Everyone's happy. The end.
And he also, he and his mom make up.
He and his mom do make up. And they live happily ever after.
Yes. Thank you for that synopsis. Mostly why I wanted to do this. It's not that I consider the film or the musical in any way essential or in any way a masterpiece. Because I don't think they are.
It isn't.
But it's almost too perfect that it's about a young gay boy about to turn 16. And here we are doing a podcast with a little gay boy about to turn 16.
Ugh, don't remind me.
Literally in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, literally in less than 2 weeks.
So this is just, this seems like a prized moment to think through this movie with a person who is its exact age, if not its exact situation. The real Jamie is from Bishop Auckland in County Durham, which is farther up north. They moved it further south to Sheffield, I guess, just because that's where the musical premiered. I've been to the Crucible where it premiered when I was going, telling people I was going there to see a show. Everyone was like, that's where they do the National Snooker Championships.
What?
Snooker is some sort of, it's like pool.
What? I didn't even know there was a National Snooker.
Snooker.
Snooker?
But they call it Snooker.
Ah.
I guess. I don't know. It's a British thing.
Let's talk about the actor who plays Jamie for a moment.
Okay. Because
he's a central role.
Max Harwood is his name.
Thank you. I didn't know that. I don't particularly like him as an actor. I think he's not very charismatic. But I really enjoy his dancing and his singing. I think he has a good singing voice. He dances well. He looks good in all of the fashion. His drag makes me angry because I will never look that good.
Never say never. I agree though. He is, I found him, especially in the first few songs, to be kind of dead-eyed.
Yes, for sure.
He's got the moves, definitely. He's got a good, great voice. But there was something strange about just something sort of empty, sort of hollow as he's going through the moves that I found a little unnerving. It is his very first film ever.
Oh, really?
So that could be part of it. Could literally have been nerves, you know? Is it your very first film job and you have to carry the whole damn film and it's singing and acting. And often they were singing the songs live, too. The more intimate songs, they were doing the Les Mis thing of singing live to enhance the emotion. So it doesn't feel as canned as musicals can feel. So I agree. I definitely felt like... I agree. What were some of your favorite songs?
I really liked Work of Art. It features the rude teacher role, or mean teacher is probably a better name for it, that was played by Michelle Visage in one of the productions.
Yeah, on the West End, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The Jobs teacher.
Yes, Jobs teacher. I totally see Michelle doing this, by the way.
Totally, yeah.
Like, because when they do the song, they sort of enter this, like, weird grayscale alternate role that's kind of fun to, like, look at. But, like, she's walking with, like, a runway, like, poise and, like, heel toe and high heels. And it's just so dragnificent.
It's so dragnificent.
It was so dragnificent. I like the lyrics. I think they're funny. I mean, I don't really have much to say about it.
Well, isn't that song a little disturbing, too? Because that's when... And so it's played in the film by Sharon Horgan, who I know from Catastrophe, a British Amazon series, but from London. She's Irish, though, and I just think she's hysterical. And this was an interesting role to see her in, because she starts out kind of warm, you know? She's, like, telling the kids, what are you going to do with your lives? You can't be performers. You can't be YouTube stars. You know, get your head out of the clouds, Bobby Strong. That's a You're in Town reference. I just realized you don't know. Yeah, that probably would go over your
head. Yeah, I was like, there must be at least two people who got that.
And that song is actually a little disturbing because she walks in on him and his friend Pretty in the bathroom. He is just, he's having a makeup, practicing his makeup in the mirror, which they lifted from the documentary, even though he was just doing that at home, I think.
He was, and he was like, oh my gosh, this is so bad.
Yeah, and what does he say in the movie? He's like, I look like my forehead's been raped by epileptic caterpillars.
Yeah.
But then he insults her, he gets mad at her, and tells her, he's like, at least I have a future. And then she parades him through the school. It's actually a...
Which is really dark.
It's kind of like a gay-bashy moment.
Yeah, it really is.
Which I like. I like, actually, that this musical, and I think this is something that British musicals do better than American musicals often, is go to dark places. The song that I really like that was added for the movie, replacing a sort of campy, cheesy song from the stage version, The Legend of Loco Chanel, is This Was Me.
Yeah.
What you called the AIDS song, I think.
This is the AIDS song.
He sings about AIDS.
He sings about, like, Pride, like, the original, like, Pride marches and whatnot, like, circa late 1980s, early 1990s. It's done in this, like, what I thought was kind of an interesting, like, format. Just on top of it, there's this VHS overlay, so you kind of have the VHS recording border sort of looking thing.
Well, they're watching it.
They're watching it on a VCR. But that was a really smart way of showing time passing, because in the corner you have the month, the date, and then the year, so we can see like how the whole story of the music taking place over like 7 years, I think. And it's a kind of sad story because the cameraman who's been filming the whole thing at the end gets AIDS. But all of his queer friends are there for them, and it's a sweet moment.
Yeah, it had a very Nelson Sullivan vibe to it. Remember, he's the guy who filmed all of that.
Filmed
RuPaul and Lady Bunny and all that.
That is exactly what I was thinking of the whole time, was like, very that guy.
Because he also, same thing, he was filming, and even like a couple hours after he had filmed something, he died. So this is, and this song really embodies a lot of the tensions in the movie that the movie raises or deals with, but often can't quite contend with fully. It's kind of a disco dancey beat, but it's fun. It's got that. But then at the same time, it's bombastic. And the title, This Was Me, makes me think that it's a cynical ploy to cash in on the success of This Is Me, that song from The Greatest Showman that was everywhere, remember?
Oh my gosh, that makes so much sense.
Because it's also the song really feels out of place in the movie, not only because it wasn't in the stage version, but because it comes up and then it sort of disappears and is never really discussed again. It's not about queer history. Like Jamie, yes, they make some steps in that direction. Jamie's like, oh, they had it so hard. They fought for something real. I just want to put on makeup and look pretty.
Yeah.
And then Pretty, what does she say?
Something along the lines of, they walked so you can run.
Yeah, which is just kind of bullshit. Like, in a sense, yes, but it's not. But no, these queens were fighting for their lives. They were fighting literally for their lives. They weren't fighting that some of them may have been thinking about the future. But they were doing this thing that I actually mentioned earlier with the drag race does, where they equate fame and celebrity and achievement in that sense with empowerment. So it makes me a little uncomfortable, maybe. No, it's sung by Holly Johnson, who was the lead singer of Frankie Goes to Hollywood, which is interesting. You know, they did Relax,
Don't Do It,
When You Want to Sock It to It.
Relax.
Yeah.
I don't know the rest of the song.
When You Gotta Go.
Bow, wow, wow.
Yeah, exactly. So that was, he was the singer. I really find the song moving in spite of myself, even though... It really is a non sequitur, and it is also an attempt to return drag to its radical roots, but then it's just tossed aside. You know, I'm just really not sure this, like, sanitized, defanged form of drag is necessarily what they were fighting for. So that's why I find the song interesting, because it's all of these things at once, which is great, because that's the type of culture and pop culture I find more interesting. I don't want everything to conform to what I, the way I see the world, the way I believe things to be. And I like that it's shallow on one hand, but also really great and really fun on the other hand. Oh, and I also forgot to mention that the guy who plays Hugo in the old film is John McCrae, who played Jamie in the original West End, the original cast of the stage version of Everybody's Talking About Jamie.
Ah, that's a cute touch.
Very cute touch. Well, me is another interesting point there, because me, the name that Jamie takes, the drag name.
Me.
Is me, right? Right before he goes on for the show, Hugo, he's like, what has it all been about? And Jamie says, it's about me. Which, okay, fine. No, it sounds empowering. It's, you know, he's coming into his own, coming into his power. But is it? Is all of this really just about me? Isn't it about us? Isn't it about community? Isn't it about protecting and nurturing and supporting and growing each other? Is it really just about standing on a stage and flipping wigs around?
The original TV doc is more about what you're saying, about, like, queer community and support of the queer community. And then everybody's talking about Jamie. He's just a selfish little cunt, in my opinion. Especially towards the end. He is just a right little bitch.
He is very cunty towards his mother.
Especially towards his mother, which I take great offense with.
Yes, because you would never be rude to your parents, would you?
Uh-uh, not at all.
He definitely goes to some darker places in the film than we see in the documentary, absolutely. But I think you're right that, and that's fine. It's the exigencies of narrative storytelling in Hollywood and musical theater. And you know, that's fine. That's what the form demands. But I think you're right that, and even though all of the elements of the documentary are in the musical,
it follows a similar, like, storyline.
Like, literally, a lot of the scenes and lines and dialogue. His mother has a best friend, who actually, in the documentary, didn't you kind of get Dyke vibes off of his mom and her best friend?
Yes. I got, like, some minor ones. Like, at one point, they were walking together.
No, I got major Dyke vibes off of both of them. Not in the film. The documentary is really about how the presence of a queer community allows, or not just a queer community, but just support, like support in the home, right? He doesn't get support from his father, but a supportive mother, a supportive friend, and then finding that queer community allows him to become who he is meant to be, allows him to self-actualize. But it's only because he has that community. And that is present in the musical, but the musical turns it into this, the standard generic narrative, the superhero narrative, the superhero origin story.
Yes, it is. I have this elective at my school called Superheroes, Modern Mythology. And recently we've been talking about Joseph Campbell's The Hero with a Thousand Faces. Mm. And, like, the whole time I was watching it, I was like, this feels exactly like the Spider-Man movie from 2002. Like, storyline-wise, plot points-wise, character development-wise, he follows the exact same steps as Peter Parker does in that movie.
And then you're like, oh wait, and it feels like Star Wars.
Yes.
And it feels like every superhero movie. And it feels like everybody's talking about Jamie. You know, Hugo is his, what do they call the man in
the mentor.
The mentor, yeah, all of that stuff.
Yeah. The threshold is when he gets his heels.
Right.
And the approach to the inmost cave is when he announces his drag show, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Then the climax is the show itself, and then his resurrection is his going to prom. Mm. Ugh.
A little bit of knowledge can be a dangerous thing. You know, I don't necessarily have a problem with that model. It's fine. It's what popular storytelling is, and that's okay. I don't want to brag on that. But when we're talking about the creation of queer consciousness, I just don't know that that's good enough. And I don't know that we should, even acknowledging that this is just the way that the forms are, this is what popular musical theater is, this is what popular narrative cinema is, I think it's okay to wish for more.
Yeah.
With Linda Carter, who played Wonder Woman in the 70s TV show, she yesterday was National Coming Out Day. Did I mention that?
You did mention that just in passing.
Which is cool. Yay, coming out. Awesome.
I've already done that.
It's fun. You didn't have to. There was no closet for you to come out of.
I'm sorry.
Lucky bitch. She tweeted that, so she's Wonder Woman, which is what she is, has always been in the popular consciousness for the last 40, 50 years.
Yeah.
She tweeted that people have told her over and over how important the character was to her, how queer people have told her that when they were in the closet, and how she says that that they're all superheroes. And I'm just like, really? Are they? You know, I think of that line in The Incredibles when he says that everyone's special, and then Dash says, which is just another way of saying that nobody is. And I think that's really actually damaging to just say that everyone is a superhero.
Yeah, there were all those kind of posters up in my elementary school, and I hear that quote all over the place, you know, especially from teachers, like, still, like, just a couple of years ago in middle school, I had teachers saying that, and I was like, already tired of it.
Well, why do you think it's damaging?
I think it partially gives a bloated idea of, okay, well, this is going to sound cynical AF, but of their worth.
Oh, so you mean, so the problem is not, it's a problem because not only are they not superheroes, they're garbage.
No, it's not, they're garbage.
How dare these garbage people?
It's just that all of these people are probably going to end up being capitalist worker bees.
That's true. Well, this is, so you know, this is the journey I've been on that my therapist helped me go through about understanding that I'm not special. When my therapist told me this last year, you know, I was talking about how I always felt like there was some special destiny in store for me. And then he said, but you're not special. And I was like, I know. And then, like, 5 minutes later, I said, so what did you mean when you said I'm not special exactly? Yeah. And this is, he really helped me see that this, for queer people, this need to believe that they are superhuman is a way to react to counter the worthlessness that we feel that society piles on top of us. And that learning, recognizing that I am not special has been one of the most freeing things that's ever happened to me. Does it bother you when I tell you all the time that you're not special?
No, I mean, I'm happy for you that you're going on that journey of self-discovery.
I love this journey for you.
I love this journey. It's a good look on you.
But you know what? You get my point, right?
Yes.
That you are special to me. You are special to your mother. You are special to the people who love you. Other than that, you are not special.
Oh.
And I think that's healthy to understand, because what I think that this does, where we try to convince people that everyone is a hero, is a superhero, what it does is ultimately get them to buy shit. Well, that's what it's really about. Like, what does it mean that this movie is on Amazon going out to, they claim that it's going out to over 250 countries, I saw, but there aren't even that many countries in the world. So
wait, really?
Yes, there's like 197 countries. So, like, where the fuck are they finding these other? Are they, like, is it broadcasting it to Oompa Loompa Land?
Is it those rich countries that Jack Donaghy mentions that only rich people know about?
That must be it.
That must be it.
But anyway, that aside, like, what does it mean that this is going out on Amazon, the country that is devouring the planet, you know, literally in the name of
capitalism.
Well, yes, but in the name of convenience, you know, in the name of whatever it's doing. And I just don't think we can separate these things. This idea that it's about me.
What you're saying about it being released by Amazon is very interesting, especially considering that two of the most important plot points in the story is him acquiring this object, these heels, and then him purchasing this dress. It's him making purchases that furthers his, like, progress as a drag queen and as a queer.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting. So, like, empowerment via consumption.
Exactly.
Oh, that's really interesting. I haven't thought about that.
Yeah. Which, for the record, they do talk about it, and they have a cute little scene where he, like, tries on dresses, and he's like, no, this one's ugly on me. And that's cute, and they don't even, like, show him purchasing it. Because that's not important to his, like, development as a drag queen. This was written in, like, totally independently of the TV documentary.
Interesting. Why don't y'all chew on that shit while we take a little old break?
Ooh, a break.
All right, before we stop talking about everybody's talking about Jamie, I just want to, there's a couple more points I want to hit real quick. The whole climax feels pretty bullshit in the film in a way that the documentary does not.
Mm-mm.
Again, I don't want to compare them qualitatively. I don't want to say one is better than the other. They're just two different beasts. But in the documentary, from the second he steps out on stage doing that Kylie Minogue number at the club till basically the end of the documentary, I was fucking sobbing.
Really?
I was so moved. I think partly for personal reasons, partly just watching this person so young discover themselves and self-actualize in front of my very eyes, you know, on stage at such a young and tender age. I found so moving, and also a bit of self-pity for myself, thinking this wasn't me, you know?
This wasn't me.
Exactly. But it was also just so beautiful and moving. And he actually kicks ass during the Kylie song, the Kylie number.
Is the Kylie one in the hospital scene?
Yeah.
There's this great part where he's like in scrubs because he was on an operating table for some reason. And he goes behind with this cute doctor behind a medical screen. And then he gets pulled to the side and the medical doctor has his shirt off and he has his heels like him.
It's a really good number.
It's a really good number. And then, of course, he does the thing that everyone does the first time they're done with something. They're like, oh my gosh, that sucked. Oh my gosh, I was so bad. But it was like amazing and really great.
He's a really interesting character.
He reminds me a lot of me, and that might be narcissistic.
A lot of me, me, me?
Me, me, me. Like that. I do that all the time. Whenever I have some minor success, I'm like, quick, I have to point out all the flaws. I do that all the time. He's 16, like me. He knows what he wants to be very definitively and like who he is, which I don't. I'm still trying to...
What? Are you kidding me? What do you mean, like for a job?
No, like who I am like sexually.
Oh, right. That's
true. He is adamant in his gayness, and I'm like, am I gay? Am I bi? What am I?
You are very much on that. You're very much the hero with 1,000 gay faces right now. The hero with 1,000... I couldn't come up with anything good.
Well, now we have to write that, right? Yeah.
The hero with 1,000 hair flips. No. The hero with 1,000 high heels.
The hero with 1,000 wigs. There we go. Move on.
The hero with 1,000 lace fronts. So you do see yourself in him.
Yeah.
Do you... What about outside of the specific ways in which you're the same? Do you see yourself... On Twitter, I saw someone mentioned I can't remember who, but they said this film was a lie from beginning to end. I wasn't sure what they meant, and I assume there was probably some anti-musical theater bias in there, perhaps some anti-gay bias, I don't know. I kind of get it, because it does have this very produced sheen to it. It feels very utopian.
The house in the musical is so much bigger than their real house in the doc. It's like... 4 times the size.
Yeah. And I think maybe it could partly be this multiculturality, multiculturalness, this way that they fill in the supporting parts with different races, mm-hmm. to point at plurality, to point at this liberal idea of inclusion without incorporating it in any meaningful way.
Yeah.
In fact, it does what Hairspray does, the musical, of flattening all forms of difference into one otherness. They say fatness in Hairspray represents all difference, represents racial difference, represents all things. And in this, there are lines where they say, I think if I remember, yeah, so his friend Pretty, or maybe he says that they can be weirdos together.
Yeah.
So for her, she's a, what is she?
They literally make a joke about it. She is... a Muslim with a Hindu name, and that's exactly what you're saying about rolling it all up into one neat little package. Here we go. Here are two ethnicities right there for you.
Yeah.
Two for the price of one.
And then pretending that acting like she and Jamie are both equally social misfits.
When she is not at all, her character growth is she puts on makeup for the prom.
Well, and not only that, they also make her that the fag hag cliche of pining for Jamie. Do you remember that? She's secretly in love with him.
Yeah.
Which they bring up just for pathos, as far as I can tell, and then never mention again.
Yeah.
So it's weird.
It gives me real bottom top vibes.
Which one? Which one's bottom? Which is top?
Pretty is bottom. Jamie is top.
Interesting. He is always, she does do what he says, doesn't mm-hmm. he? Doesn't she?
And she's just there to support Jamie in whatever he needs.
Yeah. It's fun. It's entertaining. I did want to, to get back to what I asked you, that does it feel real to you as an adolescent, as a 16-year-old? Does it ring true to your experience?
I have experienced indirect homophobia at my school very often. Especially in the locker rooms, all the boys there, none of which are cute.
Which just makes the whole thing even worse.
I know.
Adding insult to injury.
Not only are seven shirtless boys getting undressed in front of me. Well, if they're shirtless, they're already undressed. Not only are there seven shirtless boys in front of me, but none of them are cute. It's it was so close, you know. It really angers
and
me.
Anyway, the homophobia?
The homophobia. Anyways, they're all homophobes, so I wouldn't have sex with them anyways.
otherwise, you totally would.
Otherwise,
what do you mean?
I'm definitely capable of that.
Do they make jokes? What?
Oh, yeah, all the time. They make jokes about, cuddling and, being in relationships with each other. And then they all laugh, oh my gosh, that was so good, guys. And I just, ugh. That's my emotions whenever I'm in the same room with them is just, ugh, you know.
Do you say anything?
I did once when a kid made a homophobic joke in my chemistry class. Nothing came of it, of course, but...
What do you mean? What did you say? Tell.
I said that was really, really, really funny. I was just making fun of him. I tried to clap back, which I'm not great at.
Yeah, you will be.
Yet.
It's in your blood.
I tried to clap back, and because those skills aren't fully honed yet, it didn't work. My read was not great. And then it just sort of, settled down. If I'm being honest, I have not heard a homophobic joke from him in a while, but that could just be that he isn't doing it anywhere near me.
I mean, either way, it's...
It's a win for me.
Yeah.
If it's not a win for my queer peers.
Do you think you can be as brave as Jamie in your life?
Maybe. I don't know. Probably not. I'm a coward. You know this. I don't do anything remotely scary.
I don't know this. I know that you let fear drive a lot of the decisions you make, but I don't know that you are necessarily a coward.
Well,
I think you're a lot braver than I ever was at your age. Have you seen some of the outfits you go out in? Oh, bitch. I do see a lot of Jamie in you. I started doing the Cool Runnings. I see pride. I see power. No,
that's a good movie for the record.
Yeah, it's a movie. I see, when I look at you, I see a brave, I don't want to say heroic, because we just said that you're not heroic because you haven't, saved a baby from, a fucking burning building. No. But no, I think you are brave, and I think that you will surprise yourself. I think you will find the bravery and the courage when you need it.
Checks.
You don't have to clap back to every slight, to everything people say. Because often they don't even realize they're doing it, for one thing.
I'm sure that's the case with these fools.
Yeah, they could be, maybe some of them are gay. Maybe they, it's how they handle their own internalized shame, you know? What about, did it make you, do you still want heels?
Yes, why would it make me not want heels?
I was wondering, you've been bugging me to get you heels for a year. Since I started getting some.
Heels!
I know. Wait, what's this? What's this box here?
Yeah, very funny. Wait, there is a box.
What is this? Did you put this?
Bitch.
What is this box doing here? That's so weird that I just noticed it right now, but I know we're recording a podcast and stuff. But why don't you just maybe open it and see if there's anything interesting in there.
It's a pink box. Pink is important. Beach. I'm wearing these to GSA tomorrow.
Yeah, good luck. So it's not, I wanted you, I figured it's your 16th birthday. Happy birthday, Jamie. Oh, what better gosh. Time? They're not, so
I am the same person.
You literally are, Jamie. I made the mistake of going right to 6-inch stilettos when I started using heels, which I still can barely walk on. But I didn't want to start you off on a kitten heel, because I thought that's, like, insulting. That's, like, this big.
Yeah, that's just a normal shoe.
Yeah, that's like a Latrice Royale heel. There's no point. But so this is, these are 3-inch black patent leather Mary Janes. And you'll see they've got a strap on them to help hold them on. Try them on carpet, just in case they don't fit and we have to exchange them. Do you want to try them on?
Yes.
All right, go ahead. All right, so he has finally undone the buckle. It's 3 hours later.
I already struggle with belts, and this is just a small belt.
Ooh, does it? It looks like it's a good size.
Yeah.
Here, before you do it, the buckle, stand on the carpet right there.
It's kind of tight, actually.
Well, yeah, you can take off your socks if you want.
Okay, I will.
Put it, stand on the carpet. How does it fit? Gorge. Here, speak into the microphone.
It fits gorge, honey.
It looks good. Just from the little bit that I can see. Did you just almost turn your ankle?
Yep.
That's impressive.
I already struggle with walking.
He wasn't even walking.
Okay, I'm going to take this off, take off my socks, and put on the other one.
Okay, yeah, let's see how that goes. All right, we've got the lefty, well, mostly on. The buckle is still not done, but it seems to fit. All right, now we're trying on the right one. See you in another 3 hours when this buckle is undone.
Oh, yeah.
Can you stand up in them? Mm-hmm. Just remember, heel toe. That's the most important thing. The temptation when you're wearing those is to just walk, keep your foot flat.
And that's not.
No, walk heel toe, just like normal. You'll need to, you usually do the duck walk with your feet out.
Yes, I think it's like a condition of mine.
No, yeah, it's just how we walk. It's how we do it in this family. But you're going to have to get used to keeping your toes pointed forward. They look great. Can you turn around in them at all?
If I take really small steps.
Awesome. They look stunning. Huh. How do they feel?
Oh, I feel empowered.
Do they hurt?
Yes, very much so.
In the balls of your feet, right?
Yep.
Yep.
Zooey mama.
So yeah, it'll take practice.
My thigh would hurt, but that makes the most sense now that I'm thinking about it.
Where did you think it was going to hurt?
Like, at the tops? Like, by my ankles.
Yeah, no, now, all the weight of your body is now basically resting in the balls of your feet, which you're not.
Balls.
Which you're not used to. But yeah, they look gorge. All right, take them off. We'll practice later. Happy birthday. I love you, and I just want you to have all the beautiful things in the world.
I love you, too.
I will buy you higher heels as soon as you're ready for them.
I will never be ready for them.
You'll surprise yourself.
I will surprise myself.
All right. So that's everybody's talking about Jamie. I think we've said enough on the matter.
Really? No one's talking about him.
No, nobody's talking about Jamie.
He's all last day, yesterday.
He's dead.
Whoa.
All right, so let's do our final segment, AMAG.
Okay.
AMAG, which stands for?
Ask me anything gay.
All right, what question do you have for me this week, Dingleberry of the high heels?
My question was just answered, and it's, how can I express my queerness efficiently and not annoyingly?
3-inch patent black leather Mary Janes, motherfucker. There are people who like to, there are queers who like to blend in, who like to dress down. And it's not even necessarily from fear, I don't think. It's just their style, you know, and that's okay. That's fine. I don't like it when they then criticize the more flamboyant and visible of us. Because fuck that. The answer is high heels.
The answer is always high heels.
All right. Well, it's been lovely as ever to speak with you, Dingleberry.
It's been as lovely as ever to talk with you, Documenta.
I'm so glad we have these chances because otherwise we just go weeks at a time without speaking to each other, even though we live under the same roof.
I know. I'm glad for these experiences because I get heels. I can't get over these heels.
I know. They are shiny and pretty. Good. I'm glad. All right. There are already 3 episodes of House of Barbarism available. 4 now when this one has gone out. One of each of the different kinds of podcasts. We hope you're enjoying it. We hope you're listening. We hope you're devouring. We hope you're sharing with friends. We are just a small, independent podcast. We have no backing. We have no marketing budget. It's just us, basically, making this labor of love. So we really appreciate you listening, and we would also really appreciate you sharing with your friends, liking, reviewing, giving us 5-star reviews on Apple, on anything. Tweet, post, anything you can do, even the feedback that you just give us, the private feedback is great and wonderful and helpful. Thank you all so much for listening. It means the world to us. So thanks again. Be sure to tune in for Closet Practice, a brand spanking new episode on Monday, and we will see you in a week.
Bye.
Bye.
Mwah. Oh my gosh, my heels are so cute.
This has been another House of Barbarism podcast, written, recorded, edited, and produced by Document of Barbarism, your friendly neighborhood mountain man fairy princess. Remember, there is no document of civilization which is not, at the same time, a Documenta Barbarism. Mwah.